tonight from midnight, Don Letts. Right now, Rob Hughes in for Guy Garvey.
Taking you nowhere.
Angel,
come for the baby. Look at that sky, life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young. Come for the baby.
There's my baby lost, that's all.
Opening doors and pulling some strings.
Angel,
come love the baby. In walk luck and you looked in time. Never look back, walk tall, act fine.
Come love the baby.
Of a dream car 20 foot long. Don't cry my sweet, don't break my heart. Doing all right, you've got to get smart. Wish upon day upon day. I believe, oh Lord, I believe.
Come
all the way
the baby.
Run for the shadows. Run for the shadows. Run for the shadows. Me hear you say life's taking you nowhere.
Angel,
come for the baby. Run for the shadows. Run for the shadows. Run for the shadows in these golden years.
I'll stick with you, baby, for a thousand years.
Nothing's gonna touch you in these golden years. Go,
go.
Oh yeah, what a way to start. David Bowie, of course, and Golden Years from the 5-CD set of Station to Station, which is on the way in September, which includes the long bootlegged Live at Nassau Coliseum gig from New York, March 1976, in its entirety. Absolutely wonderful release. You can get it in their standard and deluxe format, I believe. Yes, it's me, Rob Hughes, in for Guy Garvey this week. Usual stuff, really. A lot of very good tunes. We've got from the archive, none other than Mark Riley and his Creepers, recorded for John Peel in the... Well, we've got three sessions, actually. I'm kind of spoilt for choice. There's three kind of mid-80s sessions, so I might even play one of each. We'll see how we go. And also on the blower, we've got Steve Wynn, who you might remember was the leader of a much underrated and highly influential American 80s guitar band called the Dream Syndicate, who have just reissued their second album called Medicine Show, and it's absolutely wonderful. So he's going to be having a bit of a chin wag. And Steve Wynn has since gone on to work with Peter Book as part of the Baseball Project and has been a kind of star in his own right with the Miracle 3. So lots and lots besides. And also a wonderful new single by Jim Noir.
No traffic behind me.
Leave the road.
There's an arrow there to guide me.
Leave the road.
Is the main road busy?
Leave the road.
No traffic lights to stop at.
Leave the road.
No traffic behind me.
Leave the road.
There's an arrow there to guide me.
Leave the road.
Is the main road busy?
Leave the road.
traffic lights to stop at.
Keep the junction coming. There's a 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 road. No traffic behind me.
Leave the road.
There's an arrow there to guide me.
Leave the road.
Is the main road busy?
Leave the road.
No traffic lights to stop at.
Leave the road.
No traffic behind me.
Leave the road.
There's an arrow there to guide me.
Leave the road.
Is the main road busy?
Leave the road.
No traffic lights to stop at.
Leave the road.
There's a junction coming. There's a junction coming.
There's a junction coming.
There's an arrow there to guide me.
Leave the road.
There's a main road busy.
There's a junction coming.
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 There's a road.
No traffic behind me.
There's a junction
coming. Welcome to the melody.
Well, that is the title track from Jim Noir's Melody Junction EP, which you can actually get free, yes, free, on his website, www.jimnoir.com, right now. And has also been promised a six-track Zupa Duper EP coming in the autumn, it says, but you'll have to pay for that, though. Jim himself says, the four-track is the remnants of an album that got dropped on the floor and couldn't be worked on anymore. As I started writing more stuff, it seemed to not really sound like what I was doing last year, so I decided to give these away and make people buy the fresh bits. Not to diss my own work, he says, but the reason they're free is because I just think the six-track EP is much better. And apparently, he said, most of the work I did for my third album became lost in the great hard drive disaster of 2009, and all I have left of it now is a few MP3s that I sent to friends. So he's now in this strange situation where he's having to download his own music from, well, kind of friends of his to hear what it sounded like. Also, on the way, very soon, I think it's the end of September this is out, the new album by The Duke and the King, and it's called Long Live the Duke and the King. And you might recognise this from it's Simon Felice's kind of post-Felice Brothers project. And it's him and Bobby Burke and Noel Haskins, both of whom used to play with George Clinton, and Simmy Stone. And it's sort of country soul with a twist. And as a bit of an exclusive for that, this is Shaky.
Don't want me around no more. And I started seeing things in my bunk at night. Shaky makes me all so shaky, mama. Come on, wake me up. We go dance however you wanna. We're just babies when the Jackson 5 grew up so fast. Come on, baby, just come and shake that country ass. Lately, it's been getting hard, so they gave me some pill that's supposed to calm my hands.
say, lady, she's got a machine gun on. And she smiles at me and kills my heart. Shakey's makes me all so shaky, mama. Come on, shake me. We gon' dance however you wanna, 'cause we were just babies when the Jackson 5 grew up so fast. Come on, baby, just come and shake that country ass. Just come and shake that country ass. Back then, she's mean old girl, and baby, it's a mean old world, I know. And maybe I'll make it home alive. Shaky, makes me also shaky, mama. Come on, shake me. We got dance however you wanna, 'cause we were just babies when the Jackson 5 grew up so fast. Come on, baby, just come and shake that country ass. Just come and shake that country ass. Just come and shake that country ass.
Well, that is The Duke and the King and Shaky from their forthcoming album called Long Live the Duke and the King. And if you're kind of familiar with the first record, which was called Nothing Gold Can Stay, it was quite kind of feathery and acoustic, really. And this kind of expands the palette completely, as I say. And it struck me that the start of the show has been very kind of funk and soul orientated. So it's probably time to get back to some weird stuff. Here is some weird stuff, followed by some very weird country.
You are dead. Rob Hughes.
Six music, music, music.
In a building tall with a stone wall around, there's a rubber room. When a man sees things and hears sounds that's not there, he's headed for the rubber room. Illusions in a twisted mind to save from self-destruction. It's the rubber room where a man can run into the wall till his strength makes him fall and lie still and wait for help in the rubber room. From his blurry vision of doom, a cycle in the man in the room right next to mine screams a woman's name, hits the wall in vain. He's in the rubber room. I hear footsteps pounding on the floor. God, I hope they don't stop at my door. I'm in the rubber room. Now they've come to get me, but they find I'm a screaming pretty words, trying to make them rhyme. I'm in the rubber room.
Well, for all his nudie suits and big smiles, there was definitely a tortured side to Porter Wagoner. That is Rubber Room from 1972, which I believe is more than a little autobiographical as well. And he was very much, you know, a kind of Grand Ole Opry regular and had his own TV show with Dolly Parton. But he was very much a rebel. And I think his last album before he died, which I think was produced by Joe Henry, kind of illustrated that. And he was making this kind of music that Johnny Cash was making in his final years. And he once Porter once caused a sudden conservative ruckus by bringing his close friend James Brown along as his guest to the Grand Ole Opry. And he also defied, you know, various kind of gender roles by performing with an all-female backing band. Kind of very great, much underrated artist, I think. And before that, the Los Angeles-based banjo, guitar and fiddle player Frank Fairfield, his debut album, which came out on Tompkins Square last year, I think, was absolutely stunning, and he led to him supporting Fleet Foxes over in the US. Much loved by, well, by me, and also Ry Cooder and various others. And he's now and also got his own label called Pawn Records, P-A-W-N. And he's an avid collector of old 78 RPM records, so he's kind of dug out these strange, very weird and wonderful things from sort of the 1910s to the 1960s, everywhere from Atlanta, Georgia to Kisumu in Kenya. And as a kind of illustration of that, that was Akumu Adhiambo. Obviously, I've not pronounced that right whatsoever. And the tune was called Pious Ogaloa. Now, this is one of the... oh, by the way, it's also worth mentioning that Frank Fairfield is on tour at the end of August. And I'm going to probably go see him at Sowerby Bridge, I think. He's playing the Vine there in August. He's also playing the Shambhala Festival in Northamptonshire. And then he plays London with James Blackshaw, Birmingham, Reading, Brighton, London again, Cardiff, Coventry, Penryn, Plymouth, Bristol and the End of the Road Festival in Wiltshire. Very well worth catching, I think. For one of my favourite albums of the year, this is Ariel Pink's Haunted Graffiti.
Mm-hmm. Claus band.
Well, hardly the most conventional ending, but that is Ariel Pink's Haunted Graffiti and Menopause Man from the album Before Today, which is just wonderful, on 4AD Records. Now then, a couple of weeks back on my regular slot on Mark Riley's, my regular Americana slot on Mark Riley's Tuesday night programme, I brought in this fantastic box set from Bear Family, which is called Atomic Platters, Cold War Music from the Golden Age of Homeland Security. And it's huge. It's like five CDs. You get a 12-inch book and a DVD, including two Civil Defence CDs from like 1961, which are kind of give an indication of the kind of paranoia that was going on during the Cold War. As for the music, it's like 100 songs, people from like Johnny Cash and the Louvin Brothers and Bo Diddley, to kind of oddities like Jimmy Driftwood and a bloke called Harold Weekly, who decided to do a tune called To Russia With Care, in which he packed off some kind of poor communist woman in a kind of wooden crate and sent her off to the Soviet Union. But it kind of gives an indication of all that kind of strange paranoia that was going on in the 50s and very early 60s. And it's got some very weird and wonderful things. For example, you have sort of various public address announcements by people like Johnny Cash and Boris Karloff and Bob Hope and Doris Day. And also from Groucho Marx.
This is Groucho Marx. A few days ago, I was talking with the Director of Civil Defence, and he told me some things that I feel everyone should know. That's why I'm speaking to you now. Did you know, for example, that your chances of surviving an atom bomb attack are excellent? It's true, but there's a big if. You must do everything possible now to help yourself and your family. Nobody else will help you. Listen, because this is important. Keep a complete first aid kit handy. Keep a closed container of drinking water in your refrigerator, enough for 3 days. Be sure you have a good fire extinguisher. Take a look around your house right now and pick out the safest spot, away from windows and doors. Make sure that every member of your family understands he is to rush to that safe spot when there's danger. I'm convinced that these precautions are necessary right now, and I hope I can convince you. They're important to your family, yourself, and your community.
I wanna see
Well, producer Perfect Peter thought Bo Diddley was singing Hey Cruise Ship there. He might be getting mixed up with Jay McDonald. But that was actually Bo Diddley, and from 1962, and Mr. Khrushchev from this great sort of Burr Family compilation of five CDs. Atomic Platters, Cold War music from the golden age of Homeland Security. And Riley, it has to be said, I caught him trying to slip this into his bag the other week. We managed to kind of prize it off him. Some REM after a quick trail.
BBC Six Music.
Steve Lamacq. New music from the week's new favourite band.
One of our favourites from South by Southwest. This was one of them, the band White Denim.
New releases reviewed on Roundtable.
Join us in the chat room, our little jury room composed of listeners. Everyone and anyone is welcome, Sleep Hot.
New bands on Six Unsigned.
And so we're going to be playing at the Glastonbury Festival this year. Six Music Unsigned features Golden Silvers.
Steve Lamacq. Weekdays from 4.
BBC Six Music. Six Music.
Gorgeous. REM and Driver 8 from the 25th anniversary remaster 2CD set of Fables of the Reconstruction. Sometimes erroneously seen as an inferior REM album, but having that's absolute nonsense. It is, I can't recommend it highly enough. The second CD features 14 previously unreleased demo recordings cut prior to the album studio sessions, which was done in, it was recorded in London with Joe Boyd producing. I think REM hated the time here because it just rained all the time and just found it very grey and miserable. Nothing grey and miserable about going to the archive and Mark Riley and the Creepers. I think it's about time. Recorded for John Peel in August 1985. This is The Creepers, consisted of Mark, Paul Fletcher, Eddie Fenn and Pete Keogh. And this is Going Rate. Well, Mark would never say as much because he's way too modest, but that was The Creepers, and they were, as Peter just mentioned as he shouted through the glass there, they were really good. That was Going Rate, recorded for John Peel from the Archive in August 1985. More from The Creepers and the Archive later on. So, yes, that was good. This is good too. Isabel Campbell and Mark Lanigan.
Yeah. man give up without a sign. But you won't let me down again. Strength is in the solitude I tried to obtain.
Isabel Campbell and Mark Lanigan, and You Won't Let Me Down Again from the album Hawk, which is out later this month, which is just wonderful. It's out on V2 Cooperative Music, and they're then playing the ABC in Glasgow on the 8th of September, and playing the Barbican on the 10th of September, supported by the American songwriter Willie Mason, who's a kind of great talent in his own right, who also guests on two of the tunes on this album, including a great cover of Townes Van Zandt's No Place to Fall. I can't even pronounce this next artist, but it's well worth hearing. from the always excellent Analog Africa label, from the various artist album West African Shockwaves, Ghana and Togo, 1972 to 79. Just kind of really wonderful and willful Afrobeat, Afrofunk, psychedelic boogie, soul, just great, great stuff. And that was the Pagadeja Custom Band and Okpe Say. So it wasn't too bad, really, in the end. And that's just a kind of strange thing. Still coming up on the show, by the way. Yeah, we've got Steve Wynn on the phone from New York shortly. Another archive session from Mark Riley and his Creepers, and one from Roy Harper, if we have time to squeeze it in. Now, back to this weird thing. It's kind of split 7-inch single between Wooden Ships and LCD Sound System. Both of them, obviously, LCD Sound System did the single Drunk Girls, but Wooden Ships, who are a bunch of kind of San Francisco stoner rockers you wouldn't normally associate with James Murphy, have covered it on the B-side of this limited edition split 7-inch. And here's their version of Drunk Girls.
That is brilliant.
I'm Mark Riley, and not brilliant, unfortunately.
Mark Riley from 7pm.
Brakes are in the room again.
You're lying, you're very brilliant.
Oh, you know, yeah. You see, it took a while, though, didn't it?
4 or 5 seconds, I was counting.
Then it's Gideon Co. at 9.
We are open for requests, points of order, gig reviews, kitchen updates.
Mark Riley and Gideon Co.
Hello, Gideon, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm fine, thanks very much for asking.
Weeknights on 6 Music.
Rob Hughes
on 6 Music. Music.
Music.
BBC. Six Music. On digital. Online. BBC Six Music. Rob Hughes.
On Six Music. Music.
Do you know, I just saw that on the shelf as I was on my way to the BBC to do this show and thought, right, I need to take that in. I will play something. That is Sat in Your Lap, of course, from Kate Bush and The Dreaming from 1982. I've also been buying a fair bit of vinyl recently, one of which was on Jack White's Third Man Records. It's Jack White, a limited 7-inch, limited edition 7-inch on vinyl, on his own label, of course, Fly Farm Blues.
Give them all to me.
I think that's it. On his own Third Man Records, Jack White and Fly Farm Blues, which is out now as a limited edition 7-inch single. Now then, the Dream Syndicate, as I mentioned before, one of the most underrated and most effective American guitar bands of the early to mid-80s. And their debut album was called The Days of Wine and Roses, and an equally brilliant second album called Medicine Show, which has just been just about to be reissued here, repackaged, remastered. An album that Peter Buck likened to an Exile on Main Street for the 80s. Steve Wynn, the ex-leader of the Dream Syndicate, will be on the Blower in a bit after this. Just great. The Dream Syndicate, and definitely clean from 1982 from their debut album, The Days of Wine and Roses, with the gnarled tonsils of leader Steve Wynn there. And hopefully, by the magic of technology, Steve is on the other end of the line from his home in New York. Are you there, Steve?
You're correct. I'm right here. Hi, Rob.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing great. How are you doing?
Yeah, fine, sir. Great to talk to you. I know we've kind of emailed back and forth quite a bit over the last few years, haven't we? But I've never actually talked to you in the flesh, as it were.
Yeah, it's really funny. That's the thing about the modern world. You can know somebody very well through their printed word and never hear their voice or see their face. So We've got one of those down now. We'll have to meet face-to-face.
Oh, yeah. Obviously, that'll be the next thing. Can you just kind of set the scene a little bit for people who either weren't there or kind of don't remember too well? You know, it's the early 80s. You were obviously from LA. You were working in a record shop, Rhino Records, I believe. And you started this band. And you were kind of up against, I suppose, what was a tide of imported kind of synth pop. Guitar bands weren't the rage at all, were they?
Not at all. No, no. It was kind of just after the first wave of punk rock and all that had happened. And the biggest thing was new romantic music, which, you know, was not about guitars. But there was a good, healthy underground scene in America happening, and I think it was exciting to be part of it.
Yeah, sure. Okay. And was it difficult? Because were record companies looking for guitar bands, or did they want kind of electronic acts?
You know, it's funny. I mean, like I say, there was kind of healthy underground scene, labels like Slash Records and a lot of things going around the country that were behind it. But no, you're right. It was amazing when we would go touring around those days. It's hard to believe now, but when the Dream Center would play shows or go to radio stations or meet people, we would get questions in interviews like along the lines of, why do you play guitar? Or are you trying to make a statement by playing guitar? Right. And we say, well, no, we're a rock band. It's what we do. It seemed preposterous to ask a question like that, but it really was. It seemed like a novelty that we would take a guitar and plug it into an amplifier.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there was a kind of group of you. I mean, they're kind of collectively known as the Paisley Underground. There was groups like, you know, yourself, the Rain Parade, 3 O'Clock, the Bangs, who became the Bangles, people like that, wasn't there? Were you a kind of tight-knit bunch?
We actually were. It really was a real strong scene, because we were all outsiders from the Los Angeles music scene, all very young. We were all people who had never made records or been in bands before, so we kind of bonded together over over love for the to varying degrees in the bands, 60s music, guitar music, psychedelic music, whatever. Mm. And we was kind of an us against the world kind of thing. So we were putting shows together, we were hanging out together, partying together, the whole deal for a good solid year. It was a really exciting time.
Yeah, okay. I mean, your debut album, The Days of Wine and Roses, I remember buying this at the time, and there were a lot of comparisons, and I know you probably kind of got sick of the comparisons to Velvet Underground, which I know is no bad thing, but there was also like Pere Ubu and The Fall and various other bands, and it was you were coming from, I suppose, an unusual place, weren't you? It was kind of 60s garage and then kind of post-punk as well.
Definitely. In fact, I think, you know, we did get developed in quite a bit. And like you say, it's not a bad thing. At the time, I kind of bristled about that because I felt like, well, yes, we are ripping off the Velvets. We're ripping off a lot of bands. be creative. And it's true. I mean, I was, you know, we were very much into The Fall and very into the Gun Club and into even the hardcore punk at the time, like Black Flag. And,
oh, yeah.
And then going back to Quicksilver Messenger Service and a lot of, and there were a lot of things. We were all extreme heavy music fans and record collectors, and I think, you know, when you're starting a new band, you resemble your record collection.
Yeah.
And the thing, you know, even when I heard you playing Definitely Clean there on before this a couple seconds ago, I can hear a lot of, you know, we got compared to a lot of American underground stuff and a lot of 60s bands, but the most exciting thing happening then was a lot of things coming out of the UK, like Echo and the Bunnymen, who I know you played
right
earlier,
and
Tear Up Explodes, and all the postcard bands like Orange Juice and Joseph K. I mean, at that time, if you could find a band that was playing real guitars and sounding anything resembling a garage band, it was, you know, manna from heaven.
Okay, I mean, it's hard to believe, isn't it? You know, we had that whole guitar revival at the turn of the 90s. It's very hard to believe that there was almost, you know, there's a position where guitars were out in some ways, you know, as regards to the mainstream at least.
It was amazing because at that point, really, if you picked up a magazine like an NME or New York Rocker or Village Voice or any of these magazines that even mentioned that a band might sound like the Velvets or the Stooges, you bought the record because it was, you know, incredible.
Yeah, a novelty almost. So, I mean, the thing is, you got a deal. I know you made your first kind of demos in the basement of your dad's place, if I'm right. And then you kind of got a deal fairly quickly, and it kind of happened quickly for you, didn't it, as a band?
Unbelievably quickly, yeah. I mean, we'd all been in other bands. I guess that's where the dues paying came in, but not with Dream Syndicate. We made our first record after 3 weeks. The first EP came out right away. We were signed to Slash. By our 6 month, we were on tour with U2 before we had been together for a year. I mean, it was very, very exciting and very quick.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, obviously, there's a very, obviously, it's a plus side to that, and there's a negative as well. I mean, the critics absolutely adored you, didn't they? In some respects, and did it kind of work against you as regards when he came to do the second album, Medicine Show?
Well, it was a lot to take in. Yeah, I mean, we were all, you know, 21, 22 years old, and it was a lot of sudden attention and a lot of, you know, I think every band's second album, any band that achieves any kind of success, whether it's, you know, commercial or critical, when you make your second record, you feel a certain kind of pressure, and you also have a lot of doubts. You feel like, well, you know, what if this ends any second? Or what if, you know, what if we're not all we're cracked up to be? All the things you don't admit to other people, or maybe even yourself, creeps into it. So we were a little bit, you know, nervous, or I wouldn't say nervous, but we were definitely affected by all the attention when we made the second record.
Yeah, I mean, did that kind of feed into the songwriting? Because it's definitely the second record is definitely a darker record, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, I think we all had different reactions. I kind of, my reaction to the success of Days of Wine and Roses, when we went into Make Medicine shows, I want to take this even further. I want to make something even more out there, freaky, disturbing, you know, kind of push things a little more. And that was, you know, I was listening to Funhouse every day. We made that record.
Right,
we made that record for about 6 months. That's a lot of Funhouse. And I kind of liked, you know, how that record just felt like this other very disturbing, dark place you got to enter for 45 minutes.
Yeah, sure. Well, you certainly achieved that, without doubt. I mean, there was you were kind of... I did read a quote of you once where you kind of, after the first album, because it all happened so quickly, you said that the songs on Medicine Show were almost kind of informed by a weird kind of self-loathing, as if, you know... can you kind of explain where that came from?
Yeah, I mean, again, like I said, since the time of making that record, I've seen a lot of other bands go through the same thing. I think Nirvana had that one, you know, after success of Nevermind, where you have... you are excited. I mean, everything you've ever wanted, you have. You suddenly, you know, people love your music, and you're given a chance to make all the music you want and tour, and all that's exciting. But you start having, I guess, maybe it's doubts you can't live up to it, or feeling that, you know, that people are loving you but getting it for the wrong reasons. Whatever things you might go through at the time that you hopefully get past very quickly by the time you make your third and your fourth record, and like me, your 25th and 26th and 27th record.
Mm.
But early on, you really wonder, am I all the people think I am? And and you react either with a sense of bravado, or you react with just kind of this sort of self-flagellation. And I think we did a little bit of both.
Yeah, okay. Well, it kind of worked. You know, from a creative point of view, it certainly worked. I mean, what was also interesting, for you were on A&M for that record. You had Sandy Pearlman producing, who people remember from The Clash, and also Blue Oyster Cult. So how did he come about?
We were on tour with U2 in the spring of 83, and our tour manager kind of went off the rails, and then we found ourselves at the first show without a sound man, and our manager knew that Sandy Pearlman was at the show and asked him to do the sound for us that
right.
night. We met him, talked to him, and we were big fans. I mean, again, like you say, the Blue Oyster Cult records and the Clash records, but I was particularly a fan of the records he did with a New York band called The Dictators.
Oh, right, of course, yeah.
I thought were just the greatest records. So, you know, he was a nice guy. He really, I could tell from the records he made, had a sense of the very ambitious, widescreen, panoramic type records, and that's what we wanted to do.
Yeah, okay. I mean, it's a kind of wonderful piece of work, but in kind of the downside, I suppose, was that the band sort of splintered a little, didn't it? Because the guitarist, Carl Prokodic, kind of he decided to kind of go off and do his own thing, and yeah, it was just kind of the two of you at one point. So did you think, right, we've had our time, or were you kind of fairly intent on pushing ahead as Dream Syndicate?
Well, you know, and it was sad because Carl and I were very good friends. We'd made a couple records together, and really, you know, again, like I said earlier, had hit that point where we had everything we could have ever dreamed of and more. And but I think the stress of taking 5 months, which is true, to make that record,
yeah,
you know, I think every record I've made since then combined took less than that. But taking that long to make a record and all the you know, everything that goes with that kind of drove us apart. And by the time we went up to tour for Medicine Show and had wonderful tours, really good reaction to the record, great tours, our first European tour, everything, we sort of had grown apart way too much to keep being a band together. So at the point we split apart, I didn't really think that I would continue the Dream Syndicate. I thought I'd keep doing music and make records, of course, you know, because, well, you know, that's what I was into doing. But we sort of reformed the band with Paul Cutler, a guitarist who had produced our first EP, and it just felt like the Dream Syndicate. It felt like, you know, true to what we had wanted to do from the beginning. So we kept the name.
Yeah, okay. Am I right in saying that the record label kind of politely asked you to leave, and you took the money and made what became Out of the Grey, which is another kind of great album from 1986?
Thank you. You know, it's actually it's not, they didn't actually ask to leave. I think they wanted to keep us around. But what they were asking us to do, which was kind of a very difficult thing, was they were asking us to make, you know, demo after demo.
Yeah.
And the way things were back then, it just was, you know, you had to work with 1,000 producers and talk about it and talk about it. And, you know, when you're young, when you're 24 years old, a year feels like, you know, 1,000 years.
Yeah.
And it felt like, you know, my God, we have fans and things are going great, and we're sitting at home making demos when we should be out touring. And I just went to the label and said, you know, we want to work. We want to make music. And I think they realized that what they wanted us to be doing and what we wanted to be doing, which is making music, did not really work together. So they actually politely let us go.
Right. Okay.
Very different than politely asking us to leave.
So it's amicable to a degree.
Yes, exactly. And I was grateful for that.
Okay. I mean, I know that obviously since you've had a kind of great career on your own with, you know, obviously solo and Miracle 3 and with Baseball Project, which is includes Peter Book. But are you able to kind of, from a distance, from all these years down the line now, be able to kind of judge your own influence? Because you were kind of a bridge between, I suppose, like the early 70s rock and what happened kind of post-punk. You were before Nirvana, before the Pixies, and I suppose before the Replacements, people like that.
Yeah, I think we were, you know, kind of in a way a bridge, as you said before, during a time when people weren't making music like that, with the kind of, you know, there had been great garage music in the 60s and great down and dirty guitar bands in the 70s, and there, of course, everything that happened in the 90s. But in the 80s, it was, that kind of music was very hard to find. And I think we were kind of flying the flag at a time when others weren't. So I think I know that we had some influence, which is nice to hear, on bands that followed who did that kind of thing. And that's great. I mean, you know, there's the whole wonderful chain of, you know, the like I say, from the Velvets, the Stooges, the Only Ones, the Gun Club, all the way through to, you know, Yellow Tango and bands around today, the Pixies, like you mentioned, you know, to great bands I love right now. Doing that kind of thing, I think we just sort of, you know, it was like we carried the baton for a while.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you carried it. I really am. Yeah. There's, as I mentioned before, there's a remastered version of Medicine Show out now, which includes This Is Not the New Dream Syndicate album live, which is another kind of cult classic in its way. Has it been strange kind of revisiting this music, going back and listening to these old tapes and what have you?
It's been nice, because I think you know, I don't listen to my old records that much, and the only time I really do is when I'm either working on a reissue for one or learning it for a tour or things like that. And they're never quite what you think they are. You have an idea in your head, you know, that you like it for this reason, you don't like it for that reason, or you would change this. And it's nice when you actually go back and hear them, like I did with Medicine Show, and realize, oh, that was a good record. We were doing something good at the time, and that's the way I was working on this. And also, the new mastering of the record and everything, you know, bring it into, you know, the way things can sound right now was exciting as well, because the way the record sounds now is the way it sounded when we made it. And that, what we weren't able to do that when we put it on CD 20 years ago, when CD sounded so bad.
Yeah, sure. Okay. It does sound great. I'm going to play the epic that is John Coltrane's Stereo Blues in a moment. But could you kind of set this up a little bit? I mean, was this kind of an improvised piece?
Completely. I mean, we were back even before Days of Wine and Roses came out. We were playing that song, and it was the song we'd play every night, kind of to amuse ourselves. It was a whole lot of E chord, and this would go wherever it wanted to go any given night. And it could be, you know, 10 minutes on some nights. It would be 40-45 minutes on some nights. And we went to do Medicine Show and played it, I think, a dozen different versions of all completely wildly different approaches, and this is the one that made the record.
Right, okay, well, it's great. Well, I remember putting it on many a late night back in the day, and it usually cleared the room. I'm going to play it, and lovely to talk to you, Steve, so thank you for doing that, and I wish you all the best. Can you just kind of fill me in on what you've got coming up, by the way? Have you got, I presume you are working on new stuff?
Yes, I work on two records right now. In fact, I'm right now mixing the new Miracle 3 record that's coming out in November, and we're going to be playing in London in November, I think the 23rd, in Lexington, and so that record should be out right about then, and that's, excited about that. That's a really, really good record. The first record of Miracle 3 in 5 years, and then also we're finishing a new Baseball Project record that we're going to be mixing that next month, and that's coming out in February, I think.
Right, okay, so plenty going on there. Look forward to both those releases, and thanks again, Steve. And this is The Dream Syndicate and John Coltrane's Stereo Blues. We'll be right back.
gonna be all right. Feel alright. Got some fine wine in the freezer, Mama. I know what you like. I've got some John Coltrane on the stereo, baby. Yeah, I know you're gonna feel alright. I got some fine wine in the freezer, mama. I know what you like. I got some cold train on the stereo. Baby, make it feel alright. I said that a man works hard all day and he can do what he wants to at night.
It's nice to have your ears with us.
Weekdays from 1.
From the moment you know.
We are 6.
Most played is the chance to dig into bands' record collections. Lunchtime Loves is My Band of the Week. Want to hear their new music. Want to hear their records. And you're going to hear it every day of the week.
Nimone. Weekdays from 1.
Plus, online now, find out how you can get your hands on a pair of tickets to Reading and Leeds Festival. For full terms and conditions and to find out more, bbc.co.uk/6music.
Rob Hughes.
6 Music.
Yes.
The Smoke Fairies and Strange Moon Rising from their debut album, which is called Through Low Light and Trees, which is out on the 6th of September on V2 Cooperative Music, recorded in Cornwall with Head producing, who's best known for his work with PJ Harvey. And they were in the session in this very room about 18 months ago when I sat in for Mark Riley on the evening show. And since then, they've toured and recorded with Richard Hawley. They've been produced by Jack White for a Third Man release 7-inch single. And they've just been supporting Laura Marling in the US. And so it looks like they're destined for big things, and they deserve it. It's just absolutely wonderful. Back to the archive now, talking of Riley. This is from 1985. The Creepers in all their glory. And I think I know who this song is about.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Typical. Mark Riley, Paul Fletcher, Eddie Fenn and Pete Keogh, a.k.a. Mark Riley and his Creepers, recorded for John Peel in August 1985 and Bard of Woking. I think that was fairly self-explanatory. Now, when I last sat in for Mark on his evening show, I played this tune by Damien Gerardo from 2001 from an album called Ghost of David. It's one of the most beautiful things I've ever heard, so I'm going to play it again. This is called Medication.
Just so happens I have many concerns. My brother's down the road, my lover in town. They both need affection and some kind of love. Well, I'm the one who gives it at any given time, from 2 in the morning to 6. Call me up and cry. Secret that we meet under covers. When asked by her man if we two are lovers, she says I hardly know him. Besides, he's not my type. Her man
keen sense of trouble. He's known to spy danger in all kinds of liars. Brother called this morning in a terrible panic. Spies in the closet, bugs in the attic. He screams bloody murder, saying we're all gonna die. And death is upon me, I know, cause it showed me pictures of graveyards in us underneath. I'm losing my hearing from my brother screaming. They're coming to get me, and someone call the police. Baby, not tonight. So I sit with my brother, who is nursing a cut wrist. He's mumbling, forgive me, don't let them take me away. I can be a good boy and stay out of trouble. Jackie, I love you, don't let them take your brother. Save me, the doctors will kill me. No, they're here to help you straighten out your mind. The TV is blaring with some preacher saying that God is among us and he hears our cry.
Well, if Damien Girardo never releases or writes another song in his life, at least he can say he's written that. That is Medication from 2001. His new LP produced by Richard Swift, as you might probably know. A new band from Australia, much impressed with a band called Tame Impala, who have been in the US recently supporting MGMT. They released an EP about 18 months ago that was sort of, I know kind of Mark played it on his show, that was just kind of great, like hypnotic psychedelia, just really wonderful. Finally, their debut album called Inner Speaker is out here on the 23rd of August. They'll also be playing Reading and Leeds, and there'll be a full UK tour to follow in November, I'm told, which should be, well, probably not so quietly spectacular. From the forthcoming album, this is Desire Be, Desire Go.
Desire be, desire go.
Tame Impala and Desire Be, Desire Go from their forthcoming album Inner Speaker, which is out at the end of August. Now then, such as the quality of Panda Bear's last album, Person Pitch, it seems like an age since he's released anything. Panda Bear, the kind of non de plume of Noah Lennox from Animal Collective. I know Animal Collective themselves have been very busy, but finally Panda Bear has released Tomboy as a lead single from his forthcoming album, and the idea being is it's kind of the first in a series of limited edition singles planned from him on a kind of different labels, all leading up to the release of Tomboy, the album, recorded at his studio where he now lives in Lisbon, in Portugal, of all places. Tomboy, as I say, is the A-side. The B-side is Slow Motion, and you can hear it straight after this.
BBC introducing, supporting unsigned, undiscovered, and under-the-radar musicians. If you're a new musician looking for a break, go online right now and upload your music, and it could be the start of something big.
It's so much help to get your music out there, it's insane.
You could play a stage at a UK festival.
Sending your demo, who knows, you might be playing Leeds or Reading next year.
Record a live session at BBC Maida Vale Studio.
BBC Introducing is a fantastic opportunity for any band.
And your music could even be played across the BBC.
Hey, I'm Dougie.
I'm Lorenzo, and we are the Temper Trap.
These bands have been there.
I'd like to say a massive thank you to BBC Introducing for all their support. Thank you so much.
Introducing. bbc.co.uk/introducing.
Rob Hughes.
On Six Music. Six music.
Well, that is Panda Bear and Slow Motion, which is available now, one of the first, well, the first in a series of releases leading up to his album, Tomboy. I think that's just about it. Thank you so much for having me. Thanks to Perfect Peter, thanks to Ness, thanks to Guy, who will be back next week, I'm told. So sorry I couldn't squeeze in the Roy Harper session. Don Letts is coming up, and we're going to ride out with Whispering Bob Dylan. Ta-ra.
I'm supposed to get it right and done. All the tired horses in the sun. I'm supposed to get it right and done. All the tired horses in the sun. I'm supposed to get it right and done. I'm supposed to get it and ride and done.